Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show.
Hey, hey, and welcome back to the Employee Cycle Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce Marable, CEO of Employee Cycle. And you know Employee Cycle, we're the people dashboard company that's helping all of you HR people leaders out there who are tired of the manual, time-consuming, and broken process of HR reporting. You know that process, the time when you're looking to answer all those important questions about your workforce, so you log into 3, 5, 7 different systems, export messy spreadsheets, try to pull them all together to get a data-driven view across your workforce, and you're always thinking, there has to be a better way. Well, look no further, because that's why we created Employee Cycle, the people dashboard that has pre-built connectors to all of the most popular systems you're all using. Systems like Bamboo HR, ADP, Namely, TriNet, Velocity, 15.5, Greenhouse, Reflective, you name it. We can connect all those systems to automatically pull in all of your people data in one unified view so that you can view, track, share, and analyze all your data. Go to employeecycle.com to get a demo. We would love to show you how we could help automate your HR reporting and analytics process. But that's enough about us, because today we have an awesome guest. So please help me welcome to the show, Libby Nicholson. She's the head of people at Veracross. And today we're going to discuss how to make HR more automated and self-service. Libby, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Bruce. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Oh, we appreciate you being on the show as well, especially because you're making your podcast debut. And so that's why we had to give you such a warm round of applause. Welcome to the world of podcasting.
Thank you.
So, Libby, we're going to kick this thing off the best way we know how. And that's by asking you, how did you end up in the wonderful world of HR?
Well, that's a great question. It's actually rather funny, because I started in healthcare. And originally thought that I would go to school and be a nurse, but quickly learned that I actually don't really want to take care of sick people, but I loved the people who served them. So that's kind of how I landed in human resources, and started my career first part of my career in long-term care and assisted living, independent living. And then from there, moved on to education companies. And so the last 5 years prior to coming to Veracross, I worked for a company that was 100% remote, with employees in 31 states and 15 countries. So had the opportunity to have a 100% remote team. And then just recently started with Magnus Veracross in September. So really excited to be here.
So you've been doing this remote thing for a while, and you've just been waiting for all of us to just catch up.
That's right. I've never been so happy at that time to be part of a remote team when the pandemic hit, because we really didn't miss a beat with regard to that. One of the things that was appealing kind of coming back into as I took this job at Veracross is they really didn't have a strong remote presence. And I think we're looking for somebody to bring some of that experience and expertise as we navigate returning to more of a hybrid model. So I'm excited to be able to offer that.
Before we get started, I just have a random question. Is there a difference in remote work when it's optional and you proactively made that choice versus forced when you don't have the choice to go into the office?
Yes, I definitely think so. I think that not everybody thrives in a 100% remote environment. I think there are some self-directed people that really thrive in that environment, that want to get up and just crack open the laptop and get to work. But I think especially a lot of extroverts may or may not always thrive in that environment. They need that social outlet. They need that connection of people in the office. And it definitely, as I think people have learned, requires a different way of working. So I would say that it's one thing when it's an intentional choice. It's different when it's something that people are just having to figure out.
Got it. I appreciate that. So today we're discussing how to make HR more automated and self-service. And I never like to use these ambiguous terms on the show without really understanding what do they mean before we dig into the topic. So can you explain, what do you see as being HR automation? And then also, what does self-service HR mean to you as well?
Sure. So I think one of the things I had to learn moving from especially training and development and onboarding and a lot of the standard HR functions that we're used to be able to be doing, you know, in person and face to face, I really had to learn how to do all of those things in 100% remote environment. And it was very challenging, but it also afforded the opportunity to continue to iterate and automate. How can we do things better and faster? And do we have to necessarily be in front of someone? Or is this something that we could create a website or a place where an employee can walk through this on their own? And still, you know, what does that connection look like as we foster that remotely? So I think, first of all, you know, the reason that we're doing that in terms of automating some of that is just trying to figure that out. And I think the second part of your question was it about, can you clarify the second part of the question for me again, Bruce?
Yeah, sure. So I was asking, in your words, what does HR automation mean? And then what does self-service HR mean to you?
So I think there's two things. The automation is just, do you have software and systems that allow you to not have to repeat yourself over and over and over? So if somebody calls and says, hey, what's our policy on this? If I answer that every time versus if I have a standard policy or platform that I can send them to get that answer. So that's really what I mean when I'm saying automated is how many times do I have to be the person delivering that versus having a way that they can go look that up. So think about managers when they say, hey, Libby, can you send me that, you know, job requisition form? Instead of me having to send that out every single time, if I can point them to a manager resource site or someplace where they can go to just select it, that's what I mean when I'm talking about sort of automating a process. And the same thing for self-service, whether it's an employee or a manager, where are we putting a lot of different resources so that they can access them on their own versus always having to go through the gate of that HR person to get to it?
Got it. And I appreciate that. So as we're talking about HR automation versus or self-service HR, do you see these two concepts as being mutually exclusive? Or do they work together and they really play off of each other to allow each other to exist?
I wouldn't say they're mutually exclusive. I think that you have to build a foundation of one in order to have the other. So you have to have some systems automated in order for employees to be able to, you know, have that self-service option.
Got it. So it first starts with the automation, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. So then let's dig into which parts of the workforce and which parts of HR, more specifically, do you believe have the biggest room to be improved and to be automated, especially as you're moving from a fully in-the-office, in-person model to either a fully remote or hybrid model?
Sure. I would say first, probably the biggest opportunity is culture. I think that there are a lot of tools out there where they are trying to figure out how do we, in a remote environment where I'm not having the opportunity, for example, to sit down with my manager and have a conversation, how do I still facilitate a one-on-one session that really helps people to have that connection with their manager? What are the tools? And we've certainly come a long way during the pandemic with that, with Zoom, with some of these other things where we're starting to be able to see each other remotely and have some of those. But what are those systems that you have in place where you're able to track, let's say, goals or one-on-one sessions and, you know, picking up what did we agree on? How does that work in addition to everybody's style might be slightly different? So one manager wants a verbal update, another person wants something followed up in writing. So finding that rhythm that works for each person in addition to what is the right system, both of those things need to kind of have some discovery.
And when you're looking to automate certain parts of your workforce, let's say culture or performance, are you looking for platforms and software that's just going to take the process that you already have and make it more efficient? Or are you looking and open to platforms that will take the process that you have and say, hey, you could do it that way, but here's a much better way, and then fit your existing process into this platform because it's just a totally different way of doing business?
Yes, I think you have to have your philosophy on whatever you're doing identified first. And then you go out and say, what is the best platform that meets that need? Because there are a lot of different ways. A good example would be employee engagement surveys. You know, there's so many different tools out there, and you have to kind of know a little bit, I think, what you're looking for otherwise you end up in a situation where the tail might be wagging the dog and saying, well, what does this tool offer that I could potentially use? Instead of saying, I have a bit of a clear checklist of what I'm looking for, I know what I'm after, and then saying, you know, compare and contrasting tools, does it have what I need?
Now, as cliche as it sounds, a lot of the times we find it true that we don't know what we don't know. And so what does that mean in regards to how open-minded you should be when it comes to seeing a platform that's telling you to potentially do something a totally different way, even though you have this strict list of requirements and a process that you already have in place? How should you think about keeping your model in the way that you thought about it previously versus saying, you know what, actually, this might be a better way and I'll try this?
So I think that's a great question. I think there's a distinction there between features that a software platform might offer and needs that you have. So if I need to facilitate a manager doing a performance review, I know what some of those big needs are that I have. But as you get into different tools, to your point, there may be a myriad of different features that they offer. So for example, one of them might say, oh, did you know, you know, we were just looking at some training options. Did you know we have a whole library for you to pick from that offers the following three things, including how to create an employee handbook? Do you need an employee handbook? Well, that required us to go back and say, oh, that's great that that company offers that. Let's go back to the other company we already talked to and say, hey, by the way, do you have an employee handbook creation feature, right? So I definitely think there's going to be some of those features where you then build out that compare and contrast list. But the fact that, you know, you do need to know going in, I need an employee handbook. So does that make sense on the difference?
No, it does. I appreciate that explanation. And so when it comes to the change management in this process of either taking your existing process and automating it in software, or like we were talking about a little before, adopting a whole new process, regardless of which path you decide to walk down, how do you best manage change management so that you actually get adoption of people using the platform and adopting this new way of doing things versus putting all of this time, effort, money, all your resources towards this, but then you're still not getting the ROI and the adoption that you wanted in the first place?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I would say always start with your managers, you know, really doing some different interviews with them and saying, I want to understand, you know, if what is the process that you're trying to do? So if it's a performance review, for example, has it been open? Has it been, did it have a rating scale? Did it have, you know, what features of that? And I started that process by just interviewing some different managers, and it was really helpful to get their feedback and say, we think this is going to go well and this is going to be well received, or actually we think this could be a lot more distracting and not a feature that we would want. And that helped me curate my list of things as I went out to then look at how would we automate this. So I really wanted to understand, what have we done before? What worked? What didn't work? What are required items and what are nice to haves? And that helped me inform my list, which then I was able to, you know, curate, add a different, you know, few different features and come back. So I think that is really important, what they're looking for. And then I would also say, from the automation perspective, how much work is it going to be to implement this when you go to look at that? And I think that's critical for teams to look at, because there are a lot of small teams out there that, you know, that requires a lot more work. Is that implementation going to be 3 to 5 hours? Is it going to be 40 hours? And those are things that you really have to look at as well when you're making that decision.
I'm glad you brought up the investment into either the platform or the change management, because that was a beautiful transition into me asking about ROI. And as you know, a lot of HR people leaders, they can struggle to get budget, to get executive buy-in, to do new things and get support for a new effort. So you always have to make a strong business case as to why is this going to allow the business to operate better? How are we going to save money? What the ROI? How long is this going to take? What kind of change are we looking to see once this new thing and process has been implemented? So how should HR and people leaders go about communicating this to their executive team or whoever is the governing board that helps make decisions or approve decisions, so that you can show the ROI and business case?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And as an HR person, we are usually not revenue drivers. We're usually just a cost center. So we do have to be able to prove that ROI every single time. And I think there's a couple different components that we look at there. One is productivity. That is usually one that we'll look at. You know, is this something that will help my team to be more productive? Will it give my managers more time? Will it give my employee or HR team back more time to focus on other things? So I think that's one area you can look at. And then I think whether your company uses OKRs or KPIs or whatever those measurements are, I think getting really clear for your HR team on what are those business drivers that your CEO is relying upon you to drive. And that should be clarified first. And then you look at how does each one of these tools fit into each one of those areas that I'm trying to prove out for from a business perspective.
Got it. All right, so now let's flip it to the self-service. We finally got some systems in place. They met our requirements and helped us automate the different processes that we had in place. And now we're moving and grooving. Things are working well. Talk to me about this self-service HR thing. What is it? How am I doing it? Where are the areas where it makes the most sense?
Sure. So let's use onboarding as an example, because I think that's one that a lot of teams, especially as we've moved to remote, have been really trying to figure out for new employees. Self-service, obviously, I think it's somewhat implied, is basically how much do I have to walk the employee through something versus how much can they just log in and figure some things out. So in the past, you know, being able to do the I-9 form, onboarding the W-4, how you fill out those things instead of having to fill out pieces of paper, you know, is it through DocuSign? Is it through Adobe Sign? You know, any of these systems where we can automate an offer letter, send it to an employee, they can sign off on it. How much can they use a mobile app? And really just, you know, move through this process without having to interface on every step with an HR person. So when I'm saying self-service, what I'm trying to figure out is how much of that can I have a tool available that will walk them through that and get us what we need. So little things like uploading your profile into the system, you know, making sure you know, find a picture of yourself. I always would tease people on my team and say, you know, if you don't have a picture of yourself, that's good. You know, I'm going to use whatever's in there, or might even find one online, and it may not be what you want. So that motivates them to, you know, go in and find a good picture. So I think that idea of how many things can they do for themselves, where it reduces the amount of touch points that you have. Now, when I say that, it doesn't mean that you reduce that personal interaction. I think what we're saying is we want to focus that personal interaction on the things that matter, on those things that build culture versus just task-oriented items. So again, I want to make sure I'm clear that we're not saying, oh, you won't ever have to talk to your employees. That's certainly not the goal. It's let's make the most of that time and focus on the things that get us further faster.
Interesting. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think that there's definitely needs to be room for a distinction between automating things and making them self-service versus just totally leaving employees out in the dust and feeling like they're in a silo or by themselves. But my question about that is, are there areas that should never be self-service and they should always be very high touch, a white glove service? I will handle this entire thing for you. Or basically wherever you can make it self-service to automate this process and empower employees to make decisions and changes and get access to data on their own, feel free to make sure that you're doing that in as many areas as possible.
So I'm not a big fan of generalities of always or never. So I don't want to go out and say there's something you should never do. I do think there are things, let's use discipline as an example, or performance management. I do think there are things where nothing takes the place of a live conversation. And you can certainly still do that on Zoom. So coaching conversations, you know, performance improvement plans, those types of things, you still really want to have that connection. But the automation might come in where a manager has that conversation, they have to deliver that verbal or, you know, coaching piece. And then they say the HR team is going to be following up with you by sending you something to sign acknowledging this conversation, which is the documentation piece of it. So I think it's a collaborative effort to determine where does the human factor come into play, where people feel cared for, but they are not replaced with automation. But also, you know, we do have to have that audit and paper trail on whatever those processes are. And that's the piece that I think we can look to automate.
And then last question, Libby, when it comes to HR automation and self-service, And let's just say if somebody's listening and they're either going through this process for the very first time, or they're an experienced HR people leader and they're just looking to refresh all their processes and they're going through process improvement, there's one thing that you want them to remember and take from this interview, what would it be?
That's a loaded question. I think that companies of different sizes have different needs. And I think, you know, really a great network of people that you can reach out and say, hey, I'm looking for this. But looking at, you know, is it 5,000 employees? Is it 500? You know, that's going to make a big difference in the answer that you might get and how much you can automate. Because obviously with software, there's also a cost that comes into play. So how much, you know, what is a reasonable expectation to have for companies of different sizes? So I would say that's probably the biggest thing when you're looking at how can I automate this? You know, there's going to be different levels of automation that you can take on at different sizes and growth of a company. So that would probably the biggest thing is you, if you have 500 people, you can't have the same expectations for some of these tools as a company with 25,000.
Libby, that was a great way to answer. That was a great answer to my loaded question. So
thank you.
But Libby, you definitely knocked this interview out the park, and this was your podcast debut. So couldn't have asked for a better interview from you for this. Thank you so much for talking about such an important topic, as I'm sure every HR and people leader out there is figuring out how to do more with less people, because we're just in a really interesting time now where you don't know if you can hire a lot more people and you need to make the best use of your time, your team, and everything that you have available. So thanks so much for shedding light on this really interesting topic. Go Libby!
Thank you! My pleasure, Bruce. Thanks for having me today. I appreciate it.
Sure. So Libby, where can people find you and Veracross online?
So we are veracross.com. We have a school information system. We also have Magnus Health is one of our companies. And so you can find us at veracross.com. And my email is libby.nicholson@veracross.com.
Awesome. And we'll definitely include all of that contact info in the show notes. So everyone listening out there, if you enjoyed this podcast as much as Libby and I did making it, then please leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, because it shows that you care and that we're providing great content. Also, if this is the very first interview that you've listened to, and you're interested in more awesome Employee Cycle podcast interviews, then please subscribe to the podcast, the Employee Cycle Podcast, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast player that you use. And last but not least, all of you super awesome HR people leaders out there, please continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.